Rushdoony Radio presents An Informed Faith, The Position Papers of R. J. Rushdoony by Rufus John Rushdoony, narrated by Nathan F. Conkey, produced with permission by the Chalcedon Foundation. 26. Religious Liberty and Dominion. Chalcedon Position Paper No. 64, July 1985. When the Supreme Court, in early June 1985, ruled against prayer in the, quote, public, end quote, schools, even if it were silent prayer, there was much jubilation in humanistic circles and some dismay in church responses. Prayer in state schools dedicated to humanism and anti-Christianity was in itself no great advantage. Prayer in these schools for illiteracy and paganism would be inappropriate, as would be mandatory prayers in houses of prostitution. How can there be a blessing on the systematic neglect of the triune God? If faith without works is dead, James 2:14-26, so too is prayer without works. We cannot ask God to bless what is against his will, nor us, if we are where we ought not to be. Some very important issues were raised, however, by the Supreme Court's decision. Implicit in the court's perspective and decision was what the Stockton Record in California made explicit in an editorial on June 6, 1985. Quote, "School prayer ruling sound," end quote, page 12. Quote, "The know-nothings are at it already, calling the latest Supreme Court ruling on prayer in the schools, quote, an act of war against this nation's heritage," end quote. The ruling, quite to the contrary, is an affirmation of this nation's religious heritage. That heritage was, religion is a private, personal matter, and that government can neither promote nor prescribe its practice, end quote. It is emphatically true that the US Constitution held, quote, that government can neither promote or prescribe, end quote, religious practice on the federal level. In recent years, this has been extended to the states. The premise of this perspective is that God's kingdom cannot be controlled by the state. The early church fought for this, as did the medieval church and the modern church. Limits were thereby placed on the power and jurisdiction of the state, limits which the courts now treat as non-existent. If the church enjoys any immunities, it is viewed as a state grant and subject to statist change and control. The central evil of the modern view is that, quote, religion is a private, personal matter, end quote. This is a revolutionary idea, a product of the modern era and of revolutionary ideologies. Basic to the Western world has been the premise that, because the God of the Scriptures is the living God, the maker of heaven and earth and all things therein, any attempt to establish man and society apart from him and his law is suicidal. Because the triune God is the way, the truth, and the life, John 14:6, any attempt to establish anything apart from him is a lie and a deadly venture, Psalm 127:1, Proverbs 8:36. In terms of this, the free exercise of religion is a necessity in order that the wellsprings of human life be nourished personally and socially. To say that, quote, religion is a private personal matter, end quote, is to say that it is irrelevant. You and I may enjoy crossword puzzles, but such things are not public concerns, merely private ones. On the contrary, however, the faith of a people is the most public of all concerns. In a very real sense, the life of the people depends upon its faith. What the state is, as well as its strength and virtue, depends upon the faith and character of the people and the integrity of the church's witness. The state can be no stronger than its people and their faith. Our problem in the modern world is that nations confuse strength with armament and with controls over the people. When the state limits the scope and freedom of Christianity, it limits its own strength and paves the way for its own destruction. It is not an accident that the de-Christianization of schools and state since World War II have been followed by a great increase in crime, drug use, illegitimacy, sexual crimes, perversions, pornography, and more. In this process, it must be noted that churches have had a great part. By their growing modernism, their socialist gospel, and their faith in state as salvation, they have become grave diggers for both church and state. Religion is both a public and a private concern. To restrict it to a personal matter is to deny its truth, and to deny Christianity religious liberty. If, quote, religion is a private personal matter, end quote, then religious liberty has a very narrow scope. The area of religious freedom, then, as attorney William Bentley Ball has noted, is the distance between our two ears. If, quote, religion is a private personal matter, end quote, then it has no legitimate place on the public scene. It should then be barred, as the courts have progressively done, from the schools, the state, and all public agencies. Of course, what is not barred is the new established religion, humanism. It is the new public faith, and its articles of faith are routinely affirmed by public figures as a public duty. The obscurantists deny that humanism exists or dominates. This does not say much for their honesty. The Stockton Record went on to say, quote, it is a misreading of the Supreme Court's 1962 decision on organized prayer in public schools and its ruling this week to suggest the court has banned prayer in public schools. It has only prohibited government involvement in a private matter. Anyone can silently pray at any time, any place, and for any reason. Government cannot suggest such prayer or ban it. End quote. Again, this limits religious freedom to a purely private and personal realm. Such editorial writers are silent when Christian homeschool parents and Christian schools are on trial. Court-ordered testing has repeatedly demonstrated the far greater scholastic achievements of such students, but the courts show no regard for their religious freedom. Do such people really believe in religious freedom for Christians? The past decade has seen the persecution and at times the imprisonment of pastors and parents. The press, which heralded this recent Supreme Court decision, has usually been silent in these other cases. Is this not hypocrisy? And how long will the state respect freedom of the press when it destroys freedom of religion? The press, by approving the court's growing fascism, is preparing the way for its own destruction. The Stockton Record quoted Justice John Paul Stevens, our John Paul III, as insisting, in the majority opinion of the court, that school prayer violates the, quote, established principle that the government must pursue a course of complete neutrality toward religion, end quote. The state can have such a neutrality only after the court can negate gravity and float in space as it renders its godlike decisions. The state rests on law. All law is enacted morality and represents as such a religious foundation and a religious faith about good and evil, right and wrong. Neutral laws cannot exist. Laws against murder rest on the premise that man is created in God's image and must live by God's law. Peter J. Ferrara in The Wall Street Journal, quote, reading between the lines of the school prayer decision, end quote, June the 11th, 1985, page 32, said, quote, the fact that a moment of silence is inherently neutral between prayer and other forms of meditation or contemplation should have been sufficient for the court to uphold the Alabama law. The majority's suggestion that students would somehow be bullied into praying by the history of the Alabama statute or the expressed hope by some legislators that students would use the time to pray surpasses fantasy. Moreover, In straining so mightily to hold a statute unconstitutional, the court communicated a message to the public of hostility to religion, end quote. In this century, we have seen a massive persecution of various religions, Buddhists in Tibet, Jews in the Soviet Union, Muslims in Albania, Baha'is in Iran, but most of all, of Christianity. The Marxists have, since World War I, slaughtered millions. Turkey massacred Christian Armenians and Greeks. Africa has seen countless massacres in recent years, as has Southeast Asia. Cuba has persecuted Christians, as have many other states. The Christian victims number into many tens of millions. The world press has been largely silent on these matters, and increasingly so. In fact, many editorial writers act and write on the premise that Christians are persecuting them when they protest such treatment. This should not surprise us. A bully with a bad conscience hates and resents his victims because he knows their presence is an indictment of him. I was told of a schoolyard bully who loved to pick on and mercilessly pummel boys smaller than himself. Then, as he started to leave, he would turn on his victim or a bystander, saying, quote, "You don't like it, do you?" end quote, and whatever the answer, beat up on them at once. Not even an unspoken dissent is tolerable to a bully. The bully press has a very loud voice, and it knows that its enemies have a very small one. The new definition of religious liberty is tailor-made to destroy Christianity by reducing its freedom to, quote, "a private, personal," end quote, realm. It's doing what the Soviet Union has done. This kind of, quote, "religious freedom," end quote, exists in the Soviet Union. Practically, it means that parents cannot speak about their faith to their children. In some states of the United States, parents can be jailed for educating their own children, that is, by applying their Christian faith to education. In the Soviet Union, husband and wife are often silent about their faith one to another. In a time of trouble, such knowledge can be used against them. As the Soviet Union defines religious liberty, that is, as a private personal matter, it can and does boast of its record of religious freedom. What faith men hold between their two ears, they are free to hold. But Christianity cannot be so restricted. It governs our lives, our marriages, our children, our homes, our schools, our churches, our civil governments, our vocation, the arts, the sciences, and all things else. It governs them by governing us and making us instruments of God's law and order. It makes us dominion men so that God's kingdom is manifested in and through us. To do this, Christian faith transforms old institutions into new ones and creates new agencies for the new life. It can only do this if our faith is for us a personal and a public concern, the way of life for man and for society. If Christianity does not do this, it perishes. This is what our Lord means when he says, quote, "I am come to send fire on the earth," end quote, Luke 12:49. What he gives is not a purely private and personal matter. It is a transforming power which will destroy what needs destruction, renovate what needs renovation, and build what needs to be built and established. The Lord declares, quote, "Behold, I make all things new," end quote, Revelation 21:5. Where men prefer their ways to God's justice, they will resent and wage war against God's remaking of all things, because they see themselves as their own gods and man as his own source of law, Genesis 3:5. They want no part of the faith. They will seek to suppress and destroy it without being honest enough to say so. This should not surprise us. It is logical on the part of unbelievers. It has been this way all through history. The important question is this. What will those who call themselves Christians do about this? Will they be silent, quote, mummified, end quote, churchmen, as General William Booth described them? Or will they be the Lord's dominion men? Well done for listening all the way to the end. This is Nathan, the narrator, speaking to you from Puebla, Mexico, from the Faith for All of Life school in which I teach English as a volunteer. I teach from kinder through high school. Now, I rely on donations in order to keep teaching and recording, so if you want to support a Faith for All of Life school in Latin America and want to keep listening to Rush Dooney while you vacuum, drive or cook, commute or whatever you're doing right now, donate at ctn.org/Nathan Conkey. That's NathanConkey, all lowercase. Or if you prefer PayPal, paypal.me/NNathanConkey. You can also email me at nfconkey, that's nfconkey@gmail.com. Thanks, and I look forward to speaking to you very soon.